Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.25 billion back to our customer owners over the last 8 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
My place in tech changes every day, but I don't fear the future because I'm with the leader, Pluralsight. Their online learning platform has the hands-on, expert-led courses I need to master new tech skills and create bigger impacts so I can learn quickly and stay ahead. With Pluralsight, I don't fear what's next. I embrace it. Tap in at Pluralsight.com and see for yourself.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcasts12. Just go to Indeed.com/podcasts12 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcasts12. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Today on The Grave Talks, The Ghost Challenger, a conversation with Richard Case. From a very young age, Richard Case could feel things. Maybe not always see the supernatural, but he knew it was there. He'd grow up hearing haunting tales from his stepfather and eventually grow into an adult who would go on journeys around the world, investigating and sometimes challenging the ideas of specific hauntings. This journey has given him tremendous insight into the paranormal and the spirit world. Today, we discuss the life and experiences of Richard Case on The Grave Talks.
I mean, I go back to when I was very, very young. My grandfather was fantastic at telling stories. He was a real character. He'd tell me the odd ghost story when I was small, and I'd say, please, Grandad, tell me some more, you know? Yeah. And he told me a story about that he used to see my grandmother's apparition, because my grandmother obviously had passed, and they said he used to see her apparition at the top of a stairwell. Now, he was staying at some friend's house, and it was a spiral staircase. So you can imagine, as a child, I used to go up that spiral staircase, hands firmly on my eyes, because I didn't want to bump into my grandmother's ghost. But I kind of liked the stories more and more. And I think you probably remember this, Tony. We grew up with things like House of Horror, Hammer House of Horror, which was over in the UK, and many of the old traditional horror films and stories and some of the literature. So I think all of it kind of added to my interest in it. I guess I kind of like being scared as well as a child, which might seem a bit strange, but I kind of remember my great uncle. I used to stay at his house, and he used to tell me that his wife had, you know, sadly she'd also died. It sounds like all the women die in my family, but her apparition was seen at the bottom of the bed. And you know, as a child, I used to sort of go to bed and have this feeling that something was in the room and felt it. And I kind of just got interested from that and wondered, why do people, you know, see things? How do they see things? How come I only feel things but don't see things? And it really started from all that.
When you say you feel things but don't see things as a child, when you were having that that emotion? What was going through your mind? How I describe that to us?
Yeah. Well, I remember that I stayed at another house where a friend of the family, they're lovely people, but they had a particular room in the house that I just did not like as a child. I would not go in that room. And they couldn't put their, they couldn't answer why that was. And, you know, there was no reason for me to be apprehensive of that family. They were a great family. And I have seen that. And it used to be that, you know, when I was young, I didn't want to stay in the room where someone had died. I remember as a child, I used to, we lived in a really old Victorian house back in the UK, which was fantastic. It had servant bells still on the walls. You could still see where they were. And I, as a child, I, whether it was over imagination or what, but I could feel when I went to bed that there was a presence in the other room. I could feel like somebody was in the other room chatting away, and it wasn't just neighbors. I really felt like it. And when I was very young, it got so so profound for me that I almost didn't want to go to bed at night. So it was quite so yeah, it was feelings of you know, something's around, and I couldn't answer what that was. And but I never really saw anything. You know, that was what was interesting.
So you would have these feelings in your own home. You have your grandfather telling you ghost stories, and you can't wait to hear more. How were other members of your family's outlook on the paranormal when you would talk about any of these things?
It's quite interesting because my stepfather was very, very religious, very brimstone and fire religious, very evangelical. So he was completely against all of it. And so are my half brothers and sisters. They'll have nothing to do with any of it. Even if I say to them, I'm only researching it, I'm a skeptic, they'll stay well away. And, you know, that they've got that kind of clue, you know, they just don't want nothing to do with it.
Yeah.
But my mum was always, as a child, she, yeah, there was a few times when she told me, that a friend of hers could read the tea leaves and tell her the future. And I often thought, as my mum, my mum could have had some kind of background in sort of trying to, you know, witchcraft in the family or something like that. In fact, there's a cunning folk. He's a guy that was called upon to, you know, to kind of diagnose witchcraft in the old days. And his name was Francis Brewer. My grandfather's name was Brewer. And I'm trying to find out if there's any connection with the family, because, you know, it would be interesting to know if there is a connection going far back in the family as well.
When you talk about you were having those feelings in the house, not really seeing anything, but you just, you had those feelings. You knew something was likely there.
Yeah.
When you look at back at it all retrospectively, do you have any ideas or clues as to who you think it may or may not have been that was you were feeling the presence of?
Well, I found out later in life. I mean, I only found this out in my 40s, which is, wow, quite, you know, quite late in life to find out. But that my father that brought me up was my stepfather. My real father, bless him, had died when I was very young. So, you know, someone could argue and say maybe he was trying to get hold of me, contact me, and it was a heavy presence. I'm a skeptic. I don't know. I try and answer why that is. I'm quite intrigued why children seem to have these imaginary friends, because we all hear about it where, you know, my son saw something and then he points to a picture and it's granddad or it's so-and-so in the family. And sometimes we think the parents influence them a little bit, so that can be. But I'm doing a little bit of research at the moment on that to try and look into that, and also go from a friend of mine, a psychologist, look at why there might be a reason why young children have imaginary friends, and maybe it can all be explained by science and there isn't anything paranormal about it. But you know, it does intrigue me that, yeah.
It's funny, it maybe there is nothing paranormal about it, but it remains paranormal until science says, this is normal.
Yeah.
it's such an interesting direction. As you were having those feelings as a child, and you say you're a skeptic, and that's good. It's good to be a skeptic. Were you questioning your sanity? Were you questioning the validity of the feelings that you were having in that house?
Very much so. I mean, because I was brought up very indoctrinated with religion, I kind of questioned that as well. So I was questioning everything that I've been brought up to believe. I mean, kids, Santa Claus is very real, and the Tooth Fairy is very real, if any children are listening. But, you know, I was brought up to question all those kind of things that we had been told. And I thought, you know, is it because I've, you know, and all the time I was just questioning. I was looking at, you know, from a young age, I was looking at psychology books. I was looking at, so it's quite interesting, the books I was turning to get my answers, actually. So, I always lean to the skeptical, you know, can this be, if this can't be, and I was a bit, well, it can't be explained by science. It must be all in the mind, you know, and I was going that way. And I mean, it's only till later in my, you know, doing what I do that I started to come across things which, you know, throw me today. And I think, well, I can't explain that. So, yeah.
So tell me more about how things advanced for you as you got older, as you began to come out of childhood and get into your teen years and your adult years. Did the interest stay? Were the feelings still there of being sensitive to things? How did things progress for you?
I think they've always been there, because my wife said to me, you're very good at picking up on people. And you know, I've often said that, you know, when people buy houses, they're picking up on the environment, you know, the atmosphere of a house. And I think it's always been there, that feeling on things. And I do sometimes find that I'll get a feeling about somebody and I'll say, I don't know what it is, but I'm not too sure. I mean, I did become a police officer later in life, but I kind of retired from that. But that did help in that job.
Sure.
You know, I always had that kind of intuitive kind of way. But I kind of, for a while, I kind of went off the ghost for a little bit. I did have a little bit of a break from it, and sort of thought, well, you know, I don't know if I really believe in this. I then went through questioning times, my old religion come back, you know, is what I'm doing actually wrong? Is it, you know, is it meant to be? Is there a God? Is it actually, you know, a crime against God? Or, you know, is it against religion? Is it devilish? Is there truth that there's a devil? Is this something I shouldn't be delving into? All those other questions came up as well. So I only kind of recognize, you know, come to a stage in my life when I suddenly thought, no, let's put all that together, but let's look at it all healthily and marry it all together. And it's all been okay since.
How did you do that? How did you begin to kind of put it all back together as an adult and begin down that journey in that way?
Yeah, I think always keeping, even though I say I'm a skeptic, I mean, I often said, when I started what I did, because I'm known as the ghost challenger, somebody said to me, does that mean you go out and you challenge things and try and make things happen that shouldn't happen? I said, no, it's because I challenge the idea that it is a ghost. So I say to somebody, lock me in a haunted building and I'll come back and tell you that it's probably the pipes or something different. I'll look at everything. But I guess I decided I need to go in this with an open mind, because I respected people like, you know, Hans Holzer, all the heroes of the past, and realized that one of the biggest things that they always, you know, recommended was an open mind and going in with an open mind. And you know, I do find even today people of a scientific elk are completely poo-poo anything to do with it, nothing to do with it, and get quite embarrassed talking about it. But, you know, on the quiet, they don't mind saying they're a parapsychologist or something. You know, it's a strange old ball game, this what we do. And I kind of decided, no, let's go in with all the angles I did. Let's go in from as far as I can and the knowledge I have of science. Let's go in from the knowledge I have of folklore, superstition. Let's go in from the historical perspective. Let's go in from all that, and let's also go in from my experiences, you know, with religion as well, you know, and becoming almost an atheist. So bring it all together. And I think that's kind of always been my way. And if I've gone out with groups, I've said to the groups, forget what I say to them, don't say tonight you're looking for a ghost, because straight away you're putting out there that there's a ghost you're looking for, somebody that once died. You know, it may not be that that's making the noise. You know, it could be a mouse, it could be some other unexplained thing that's happening. You know, it could be us that are haunting ourselves. There's so many things that could have answers to it, you know. And you know, we have to just have a real open mind to it.
Sure. There's a lot of things here you've mentioned. I've just been kind of writing down my notes as we go that I'd love to unpack because they're very interesting angles of topic. Let's just kind of jump into some of them that you just talked about. Religion, folklore, and things of that nature. And this is a very broad-based question, so I'll let you kind of pick it up wherever you want to. How much does folklore, if you will, play a role in the belief systems of individuals when it comes to a haunting? Say someone has something going on in their home they can't explain. How often are you finding the world of folklore or religion coming into play in terms of how they're interpreting what they're experiencing?
Very much a big part of it, I would say, because, you know, you find the also people interpret, I mean, if people are brought up to believe that it can be demonic and they can be possessed and they have this real fearful fear of that from their religion, then they can take on a haunting in a very, very sort of different approach. I mean, for one example, I was asked recently about Ouija boards. I mean, I myself think it's moved by the hand. I've had people blindfolded and seen that they've come up with gobbledygooch. But I said, you know, my view on Poundland selling the Ouija board, I said, well, you know, I don't really, I think the more danger in the fact that somebody's gone around and said that everyone's going to suddenly be possessed by demons and it's going to affect them, because I think that's such a powerful thing for someone to believe. And I think when religion has kind of brought that in sometimes to almost put somebody off go in a certain way because they want to kind of manipulate that person, it can be quite devastating and quite destructive. So I have seen that religion does play a part. Folklore does as well. I mean, because, you know, if you go over to the Philippines, you've only got to look at their beliefs in vampires, their belief in, you know, they're haunted by a particular a spirit that's got a long tongue and picks on the pregnant women, and you know, they believe they come from the Bele trees in that area. So a lot of the folklore comes from those stories, and they were told really to stop children going out at night a lot of the time. So folklore and religion does, yeah, they do play a big part sometimes in people's beliefs.
When it comes to the religion aspect of paranormal experiences, especially when we get down to the world of people being possessed or believing they're possessed or having things of that nature where it gets really dark,
yeah.
Is it something, this is where I get confused, and I've talked to hundreds and hundreds of people over the years on these topics, but it's still confusing because you always walk away with more questions than answers, but I always love to hear perspectives. Does, let's say someone is possessed or they believe they are possessed, let's say others believe they are possessed, yet they do not necessarily hold within themselves any sort of religious beliefs. They're not Christian. They're not this. They're not that. They're atheists. They're not holding anything. Does it require the individual who is under that sort of duress, that possession, if you will, to hold any sort of those beliefs for in exorcism to actually be effective? Essentially, do you have to believe in the method of exorcism that's being performed upon you for it to be effective, whether it be Catholicism or whatever it may be?
I mean, I'm like you, I'm still exploring that kind of avenue myself, because I'm still very intrigued. I have said I would, you know, I've gone out with spirit mediums, rescuers, where they've said about attachments. They haven't called them like demons or anything like that. They've gone that it's just an attachment of a spirit, which I kind of find more kind of possibly acceptable. But they've told me about those things, I would love to go out with these exorcists and see what goes on there as well, because some of those things can be quite you know, quite jaw dropping, and you know, some of the things is a completely different ball game. And I do believe that probably if somebody's desperate for help and you say, this method that I'm going to give to you is going to it's going to help you. It's going to take it away. This is proven to work. It's worked here. It's worked there. Then I guess there is that, effect of placebo, that straight away, that's going to make the person, probably think, even though they may not necessarily believe in demons, that this guy, is an exorcist, he's a professional, he's going to do the job and it's going to go away. I mean, often here, I think it was, I forget her name now, well-known actress, and she died not so long ago, but she had an apartment in New York that was very, very haunted. And she called in an exorcist and everything was done. In fact, it was a voodoo priestess who came in and she told her what to do and everything. Everything went well. Everything went brilliant. And then, I don't know, a year later, suddenly it was all back again. So the question is, what happened there? Was it the actress that was getting those feelings and thoughts and they weren't necessarily paranormal? Was it and she just lost her faith in what that woman had done? What had happened? So yeah, I agree with you. There's more questions than answers with those things, and they are definitely very intriguing. I mean, I do believe a lot that if you can convince someone, which again is dangerous for those that aren't very healthy people, but if somebody can convince someone that they can help them in a time of need, and I know this from psychological and police work, then they're gonna grab that person and they're gonna put a lot of faith in that person.
It's just an interesting thing, and maybe it's just some of the bias that has been put into me. I was brought up Lutheran as a child, and I don't necessarily say that I am today, but it's one of those things where it makes you wonder, where you have people who say, all religions for the most part, not all, but many of them, they're all, this is the only way to go. Everything else, it's wrong. And so to have one go in and say, okay, here we're going to exorcise the demon out of it through this version of religion. And then the other one is going to go in a totally different one, say, okay, we're going to exorcise it out of this version of it. Why would both of them be just, and I've seen it, I've heard it, where, both can be just as effective. And if one of them, quote unquote, is not the correct one, then how are they both having the same power that each have?
Sure. Yeah, I think so, because I keep going back to my skeptical side and thinking more with that it's probably a great, a lot of it is the answer of, if you've got we've got something wrong in the home, like a leaky roof, and, or something we can't, leaky roof's quite simple.
But, sure. Yeah.
But if we've got something a little bit more complex, then I don't know about you, but I go to many, many experts before I get to the answer of what needs to be done. And I think that probably all of them are helping, because they're all claiming to put that bandage on, that plaster on, and answer the problem. And so each of them, even though that person may not say it's a Catholic person and the Catholic priest has come around, done the exorcism, that's probably worked. But if equally a friend has said, don't mention this, but my friend's a Buddhist and he can do a Buddhist exorcism, is it okay to have that? Then maybe it just works because of that person's belief and faith. But then you start thinking about evil and good and bad, and you do find that a lot of religions and a lot of folklore, they all seem to go the same way anyway when they talk about these kind of things, and it seems to be that the exorcisms are very, most of them are all following the same sort of path, and maybe it is all one path, and maybe who's to say? Because I'm not saying that I believe in that sort of thing, but I'm not saying that it isn't, true.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very good analogy, like with a leaky roof. I really do like that, because it's maybe more so the intent and not necessarily the dogma of the religion, where it's, look, no matter what it is, if you're a Buddhist, if you're a Catholic, if you're this or that, and the intent is to relieve the person of the suffering they're going through, the intent is to relieve the person. It's not to impose, here's this belief system. Because that's not what's a question right now. It's trying to get rid of something that is attacking someone.
Because I found something quite quite disturbing once. I mean, I don't do households or go to houses, but sometimes because of what I do, I've been called to give my opinion on something. And we were called once to a young who was going for a bit of a difficult patch. And, you know, we did find out in the end that she had a lot of issues that needed to be dealt with by a professional. And I said, please contact a counsellor. Please go to these people. You know, I'm a police officer. These are the people you need to contact. She was calling out to all these kind of ecstasies. She said, my family are telling me to go to the ecstasies. I thought, well, okay, I understand that, but there's such a deep-rooted psychological problem that could be going on here that may have nothing to do with, you know, anything demonic, which could cause more, you know, more problems than good. So
yeah.
It's a very, very slippery slope as well. So, yeah.
Yeah, it is. It's almost like you got the leaky roof. There's a couple options you can take here. You can get the you know, rubber in a can and spray it on it, yeah. Or you can fix your roof with new shingles and figure it out that way. But both will likely stop the rain. One maybe longer than others, but both can get it done. There's other ways of doing it. There's always different ways. I think that might be it. There's always different ways. There's not just one specific way to, I guess, handle situations like that.
And I think sometimes
it seems the folks who quite commonly are involved in the handling of those sort of situations, they're going to be the most vocal spokesperson for their way being the only way, you know.
Yeah.
And I think it's that. I don't think that's done necessarily in a, you know, in a nefarious way. It's just that's what they know. That's what they believe. I think
that's the thing. Yeah, we've got to be careful saying that, you know, it's goodwill. They've got goodwill. And, you know, and a lot of those people are very, very trustworthy, you know, people that do a great job, you know, and it's we've only got to think of some of our, you know, the Warren family and the Warren legacy and people like that. Great people, you know, and people that you would turn to if you were really, I mean, you know, if I suddenly, luckily doing what I've done, I've not yet had anything towards, I know that might be a question you go on to a bit later, but nothing so bad that I've felt help, you know. I've managed to kind of cope with it myself, but I can imagine somebody that doesn't understand this, it's quite a frightening time, and they would just love it if somebody like that could help, you know, solve the problem.
I agree. I mean, I know there's we have guests. I'm friends with some of the folks from, you know, I'm friends with grandson of Ed and Lorraine, and he's been on the show many times.
He's great,
Chris.
He's great. Yeah. Chris.
And I talk many times to other folks, you know, who are in the circle still of the New England Research Paranormal Society quite frequently on the show, and they're, you know, they're obviously very staunch on their belief on how this works for them, and rightfully so, because it has worked for them. But that's the thing. There's likely many other ways to do it when you look at more and more cases. And I think oftentimes they'll look at it too, and depending on who they are, and say, yeah, there's probably other ways too, depending on the belief system. Ultimately, the goal at the end is to help the person at the end of the day.
I think also what it does is with Chris, because Chris is a lovely guy, it does make you think sometimes when you do see these amateur groups that go out and mess about with these things, you do think, well, you know, if Chris, what Chris has experienced and seen, and what I saw when I went to a woman that was rescuing someone, you know, it does make you think, you know, go with caution, because you know, there are some pretty scary stuff out there that's happened. Definitely.
Yeah, definitely. Here's an interesting one. And this is something that I can honestly say I have seen an increase in the amount of stories that are sent into us over the last 2 years. And it's been kind of fascinating because we can kind of see trends. I don't go out and I don't investigate. All I do is I curate these stories and I present them on these shows, on this show and our other program. And so we can kind of see trends sometime, which is interesting because we get thousands of stories sent to us every single year. And it's something that you had just mentioned earlier in the conversation, the idea of people haunting themselves. This is something that I don't think was really all that common or brought up into the lexicon of hauntings for, I don't know, at least not very frequently until somewhat more recently, in my opinion, at least as far as what we get in. But I've had so many just fascinating stories of the living haunting the living. What sort of experiences or stories have you seen or experienced in your work with that?
Well, it's fantastic that you've said that, Tony, because one of the things I did experience was my grandfather, the lady that he stayed with, she told me, "I remember the day that your granddad came home," and he didn't. And I said, "Well, what happened?" She said, "Well, what it was," she said, "I was upstairs and he shouted up to me and said, you okay up there and that?" And she said, "Yeah, I'm fine. I've been busy today doing so-and-so." And he's chatting away and she can smell the aftershave, can hear his tone of voice and everything. Went downstairs, he wasn't there. And he came home probably about 2 hours, 3 hours later. So that was a prime example of when we say about the living ghost, a ghost of a living person. And that there are lots and lots of tales of that. Usually, though, you find the story connects to if something's going to happen to somebody. I mean, sadly, there was a lady I knew that her son died and she didn't know he had died. And somebody saw her son looking up at her house outside, probably about the time that he would have died, and only found out they died and said, "Oh, my gosh, I saw your son." And he wasn't there because he had died in like a ghost of premonition. So living ghosts, yeah, it's a very interesting one, and one I can't really give any answers to because I don't think any of us can, but they are getting more and more, people are more and more looking towards that. And also the other thing is, with psychokinesis and that, and do we affect, I've been into a place where the atmosphere's been so great and I've been with other people of like-minded people, and I said to them, "Okay, so we all are concentrating on an object over there, and you want that object to move." And they're saying, "Yeah, you really want it to move or something, like to make a noise or something." And they said, "Yeah." I said, "Let's just concentrate our energy." And I don't know what the heck I'm just giving this a try. And we are. And things happen where everyone's concentrating on that one energy. So, causing the energy to make that activity happen. So who knows, when these ghost hunters go to all these locations, are they creating the haunting? Are they creating their own ghosts? Are they creating their own atmosphere? It's a friend of mine, a lady I know, told me something about that recently. Corinne Besson, she's a friend back in the UK, and she told me something on the story that's what she was thinking about, was people, she's wondering if people haunt themselves. And it kind of made me think, it's funny you should say that, Corinne, I've been thinking that for a while. And then someone else I knew said, "Well, I've been coming up with that." And is it us that are doing it? And it's an interesting one.
Is it us that are doing it, or is it just another, branch of the ghost family tree where it's like, yes, there's dead ghosts too, but there's the living as well? There's one story that, before I get to my story, let me ask you about the one you just talked about where, smelling the aftershave and hearing him in the bathroom. And he's not dead. And I mean, do you know if there was any sort of, questioning of this, of like, were you daydreaming wherever you were about?
Unfortunately not. Unfortunately not, because I have heard other people come up with something on that. I mean, the Society for Psycho Research have done a lot of research in that. And I know people in that. And I know there are occurrences where sometimes the person's about to go through a traumatic experience. I mean, there was an individual that was going out for a drive and he suddenly had a bad feeling about going down a road, and he wouldn't go down that road. We all know those kind of scenarios. Mm-hmm. And he turned a different way, and down the other fork of the road there was a massive accident. But the moment he had that thought, some relatives back home saw him as if he was in the house. So could it be that we're giving off that energy, that fear is so great, that warning is so great, it gives off some kind of energy, and that person sees you almost as a, a crisis apparition.
Yeah.
Even though you don't actually, even though the consequences turn out completely okay. So was it my granddad was about to get into some trouble? Was he? Yeah, so it's interesting. I'd like to go into more on that, because I research. I mean, like yourself, I don't tend to, I go out with groups and I go out and do talks on folklore, witchcraft and all sorts of things around the world. So that's a fun side is I'm left alone in buildings on my own, and people follow me on social media. But I'm not sure an investigator, as maybe a long time ago I did kind of go down that route, but I stay away from these gadgets nowadays. I really avoid them like the plague.
Sure.
But you know, I do hear about these things, and I'm thinking there's a lot more research needs to be done on this, because it's interesting you're getting that over in the USA, and I'm getting a lot of that in the UK as well.
That wraps up the first part of our conversation with Richard Case, the Ghost Challenger. In part two of our conversation, two of the most common times for the living to be visited by visible spirits are usually early childhood and near times of death. Why is that? We will ask Richard that question. Also, being the Ghost Challenger, what are some of the cases that he's looked at that he honestly thought were true hauntings, but turned out to be almost anything but? And what about cases that turned out to be very haunted, that initially Richard felt may not be so haunted to begin with? And in the age of COVID-19, how and where are ghosts being used in lockdown to keep people safe? Until next time, for the Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.